Total Tuscany Podcast, number 36. Ciao, and welcome to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined once again by the co-publisher of TotalTuscany.com, my friend. He's your friend, Mr. Pat Campagna. What's going on, Pat?
Travis, I'm having a great day. How about you?
You know, I'm still living Florence and Tuscany in my mind as we returned 2 weeks ago, I think today on the day of the recording, and my body still hasn't gotten over the jet lag, but the memories haven't left me either. And that's what's great about social media, is that we can relive those memories by the pictures and videos that we've taken. And we encourage you to follow us on our social media channels, at Total Tuscany on Facebook, at Total Tuscany on Twitter, and brand new, at Total Tuscany on Instagram. One of the things you and I struggled with when we have traveled to Tuscany and Florence are the items in which we should buy. And I hate to admit this, but I have now gone 4 times in the last 6 years, and I still have not returned from Florence or Tuscany with an authentic souvenir or craft or piece of art that is my own, because I start analyzing things, I start questioning things, I start going, is it authentic? Am I getting ripped off? I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real. So I've made these fabulous trips, and the memories I have are pictures, but I don't have anything of substance, should we say, I hold on to.
Now, part of that may be because you're too picky.
Or too cheap, one or the other.
But, you know, but you're in, when we spent the entire week, nearly the entire week in Florence,
yes.
And you are inundated with amazing goods, a lot of which you can tell are made in the shops that we visited. But there's an awful lot that isn't, and it's really difficult to pick.
It really is, and you know, I'm probably, Pat, you're right. I'm a little too picky, probably, but I still want something, and I when I know what I want, I usually purchase it. But I haven't done that yet. Of course, when you walk up and down the streets of Florence and you hit the market area, you're really worried about what's genuine, what's not genuine. We stayed in the Alterano district, which we know a lot of things were authentic because we went into the shops, we watch people make them. So you can find authentic goods, but you can also find things that aren't so authentic in Florence. Mm-hmm. And that's why today's podcast is so important, especially if you're getting ready to make that trip to Tuscany or make that trip to Florence, because Laura Morelli has a PhD in art history. She's lived over 10 years in Europe. She spent 4 years in Italy and has really perfected what is genuine, what is not genuine when it comes to items that you're probably going to shop for.
And I'm a little embarrassed to tell her what I shopped for. I need to tell her that story. She's an accomplished art author. She's a historical fiction author. But she's really opening up the whole venue of how to select those items that you want to bring back from your trip.
Laura Morelli has an authentic art series. This is the second in the series that focuses solely on Florence, and it comes with a companion guide as well. And we'll learn more about those books in this edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. Here's Laura Morelli. Laura, your second in the series of the authentic arts is coming out on April 1st, and it's all dedicated to Florence. How excited are you for people to get to experience your knowledge and take everything in that is about Florence? Because Florence is such an exciting city.
Well, Florence really holds the distinction in Italy for one of the richest cities of our artisanal traditions. If you think about the concept of made in Italy, it's really inextricably linked with Florence. All you have to do is think about leather goods, for example, and everybody thinks of leather when they think of made in Italy. Florence is also extremely well documented, and the Florentines themselves, even through the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, were well aware of their position in the world, and they kept copious records. And so it's been a lot of fun for me to take a really deep plunge into that research, and I'm just thrilled and excited to be able to share it with people and give them a little bit of more of an appreciation for the long history and the fascinating picture of artisanal tradition in Florence, because it is extremely rich, even by Italian standards.
Laura, where did your interest in Italy and Florence, where did that come from?
Well, I'm trained as an art historian and went into art history with the idea of teaching college, which I did for a time. But when I had the opportunity to live in Italy, the first thing I did, of course, was go looking for Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci and Raphael and all of those great masters of centuries past that we learn about in our art history classes. But when I got there, I realized that many of these artistic traditions that have been passed down through generations are still living in Italy. Just around the corner from my house, for example, there was a cello maker just toiling away completely under the radar, turning out these absolute masterpieces of musical instruments. In Italy, all across the country, you can find shoemakers and people turning out ceramics and glass and wrought iron and all of these artisanal traditions that trace their history back to the Middle Ages and to the guild system. And I was so excited to find these artists really still and these traditions still living and still thriving. And it became my mission to share that with people, to share the stories and the people and the history behind those living traditions.
It's interesting that you say that because we just returned from Florence, and forgive me if I'm saying the district wrong, but we stayed in the Altarano district, which we found a lot of, you know, small artisans or craftsmen still perfecting their craft and still carrying out their trade in these little shops. It was so much fun to watch.
Oh yeah, and that district of the city of Florence, the Oltrarno, this is the across the Arno district, is a little bit like the left bank of Paris, if you think about it. You know, that was traditionally a poorer section of town. It had streets where artisans were clustered by trade, for example, shoemakers or furniture makers. Some of the names of the streets still bear the names of those trades, which is fascinating. If you read a little bit of Italian, and I encourage you to really pay attention to street names in Italy, you can learn a lot about the history of a town just by reading the street signs. So you'll quickly see where the jewelers were clustered and where the blacksmith street was. And it's a great way to really experience that artisanal history.
One of the observations that we had was that it wasn't an elderly group of artisans either. There were quite a few young. The younger generation is heavily involved. And
you're right. Often I read an article in the news or I see a story and the headline reads something like the last shoemaker in wherever, the last gong maker in Hanoi. And there are always these articles in the news that come up. And I don't want to dismiss the fact that there are many traditional trades that have dwindled or are disappearing. But in Italy, I find that there is still a really thriving culture. I think there are a number of factors that account for that. One is certainly the strength of la familia, the family, and that there's still that kind of urge to pass on the craft to the next generation. I will say there are also some more formal government initiatives that have helped promote and encourage younger people to go into those traditional trades. So I think it's kind of a combination of factors that accounts for that vitality still among the younger generation in choosing those traditional crafts.
On your website, lauraborelli.com, there is a section where you have a video presentation for a TED Ed talk, which focused on artisans and crafts and craftsmen. What's the difference? You know, I think a lot of people says, well, if it's art, it's in a museum. If it's crafts, it could be for sale in a shop. But what is the difference between art and crafts?
Well, this is a very interesting topic to me, at least, and I think a lot of people don't stop to think about it. But the difference between art and craft is a very slippery slope once you try to start to distinguish that. What's interesting, though, is that Florence actually plays a pivotal role in our understanding in the Western world of art versus craft, because around 1400 in Florence, there were a group of painters who began to petition their patrons to be painted, to be paid, on the basis of merit instead of on the basis of square foot, which is how they were paid previously. And there started to be a cultural shift. Now we look back on it as historians and call it the Renaissance, or humanism, Renaissance humanism. And it was an idea that valued individual creation over communal creation. And in the course of a generation in Florence, it's really amazing. It was, you know, these guys like Michelangelo and Leonardo and Raphael, who all were contemporaries. In the course of that generation, people's attitudes toward art shifted, and there started to be a divide between art and craft. What's fascinating, though, is that those people who were sort of left out of the spotlight, those who were creating wrought iron chairs or ceramic pots or glass, were still highly valued, and they still continued, and they still continue today. And so it's the craftsmen have sort of outlived those artists of the mm-hmm. past. But Florence really stood at the epicenter of that shift, of that distinction in that we make in the Western world between art and craft, which doesn't exist in the rest of the world, by the way. It's only a Western conception, this idea of art versus craft.
Why is that?
Well, again, I think it stems back to the Renaissance and people's ideas of painting, sculpture, and architecture is somehow elevated. There was a man in Florence in the 15th century named Giorgio Vasari, who was a local historian and not incidentally a friend of Michelangelo. And he wrote a very influential book called The Lives of the Most Famous Painters, Sculptors, and Architects. And in it, he gave a lot of juicy biographical details and talked about the techniques of these artists. And it sort of elevated those three trades, painting, sculpture, and architecture, above all others. And it had a long-lasting influence.
Is there a little enclave or a special little place in Tuscany that means something to you, if for our listeners, if they wanted to go find some potteries or some crafts, where would you direct them beyond the traditional focus on Florence?
Well, one mistake I think some travelers make is being lured by the beautiful Maiolica ceramics that are for sale in Florence. You know, Florence actually doesn't have very many traditional potters and ceramicists these days. And that's because the so-called fire arts, which are ceramics and glass, those crafts which required fire in order to be made, were located historically outside city walls because they posed a fire hazard. And so the towns of Montelupo Fiorentino and Sesto Fiorentino, both of which are just on the outskirts of Florence, grew as centers for ceramic production. So if you're interested in ceramics, I encourage you to make this short little day trip outside of Florence to see the ceramics being made. Neither one of these towns, Montelupo Fiorentino nor Sesto Fiorentino, are particularly charming in their own right. However, it's a wonderful opportunity to immerse yourself in the history of traditional craft and to come face to face with makers. And that's really my goal, is to help people have a more culturally immersive experience. And one of the best ways you can do that traveling in Italy is coming face to face with people who are making pottery or wrought iron or glass or textiles. I find these people are typically humble and generous and more than willing to share their passion. I mean, it's their life's work, and they love it when people come and appreciate what they're doing and want to see what they're doing. They're more than happy to share it.
Laura Morelli's Authentic Art Series, the second in the series Florence, is coming out on April 1st. And let's really dive into the book, Laura. And there are hundreds of different travel guides out there, but those usually focus on, you know, where to visit, where to stay, where to eat. When did you figure out that the niche of, hey, where to get authentic goods was very important for travelers to learn about?
Well, I think all of us want to come home with a special souvenir, right? You want to bring home something in your suitcase. But for many of us, selecting which leather bag or which silk scarf to bring home from Florence can be an intimidating experience. When you're in an unfamiliar environment, sometimes it's hard to tell if something is authentic, if it's been made by hand. You wonder if you've paid too much or even been scammed, if you've fallen victim to a tourist trap. And unfortunately, in Florence, as well as many other cities in the world, there are many of those. So in short, it's not easy to tell the treasures from the trash. And so my goal is to really lead travelers beyond the tourist traps. I don't tell you where to stay or where to eat. There are plenty of guides out there who do that very well. My goal is really to help you hone your skills and train your eye to be able to recognize, for example, the difference between an authentic piece of Murano glass, if you're going to Venice, for example, from a fake, or an authentic carnival mask, an authentic handmade leather wallet, from the many knockoffs and fakes that populate the retail shops across Italian cities. And as I said, my focus is really on that cultural immersion that happens when you come face to face with an authentic artisan who's ready and willing to share their passion with you.
So you're telling me that $5 scarf I got in the market down by the Duomo is probably not authentic.
Well, in my Florence guides, I give a lot of tips about things to look for. For example, are the edges of that silk scarf hand turned? Are they hand stitched? What color is the stitching? Can you take off a ring and slide it through? If it slips through very easily without tugging or tearing, it's more likely to be a real silk. Otherwise, it could be polyester or any number of fabrics masquerading as silk. So there are lots of little tips and tricks of things that you need to know if you want to come home with a souvenir that you're going to treasure for the rest of your life.
See, this is where Pat and I needed an advanced copy of this book, because I'm gonna have Pat tell the story, because leather was a big thing with us on our recent trip. We went into leather shops. We went up and down, you know, Market Rose. But Pat, tell your leather story in the briefcase you got, because you and I struggled with purchasing leather.
It was a task. I'm an attorney, so I wanted a new briefcase from Florence, and finding a briefcase took the entire week. Some shop operators told me that, hey, they're Italian. Some others told me, you know, they're actually made in China. One person said, you know, it depends on how many hours they put in. We heard the gamut. What I did notice was that most of what was being sold said made in Italy. It's all in English, and made in or from Florence, not made in Firenze, not in Italian. How do we distinguish? How should I have distinguished a leather briefcase made there versus made in China?
Well, you chose one of the very trickiest things to buy in all of Italy.
Tell me about it.
Leather shopping is really can be really a minefield in Florence. It's a very complex topic. This topic of leather shopping in Florence. And I have an entire chapter devoted to it in this book that I need to share with you for next time. Mm-hmm. Italy has different tiers of leather production. There is an industrial tier. Italy is one of the largest leather makers in the entire world, and they make things for leather for car upholstery, for sofas and four wallets. There is also a luxury tier if you think about Gucci and Ferragamo and all of those names. And by the way, most of those luxury brands in Italy have their roots in the artisanal history of Florence and Tuscany. And that's really another whole fascinating topic. So there's that tier. And that's a little complicated because some of those luxury brands actually outsource some of their production to those same companies that might make your steering wheel wrap for your car, for example, with some hand-finished details. And then there's a whole artisanal tier where there are people who hand-make wallets, bags, jackets from scratch. Now, the tricky thing about Florence is that the same bag might be sold in a high-end boutique or in a street stall in one of the markets. And they're just different venues for selling the same item. And so you really have to kind of divorce the context of the item you're shopping for from the item itself. And this is where those skills of being able to recognize what is top grain versus full grain leather. What does it look like? How do you know what you're looking at? What about the stitching? What about the lining? What about the color of the bag? Has it been, you know, painted? Has it spray painted? Is it really natural? These are all considerations for when you're shopping for leather in Florence. So it's quite a complicated subject, but
you've confused
it's really
him even more. You've confused Pat even more. Now he's shaking his head.
I have no idea what I have purchased, Laura. No
it's
idea.
It's very tricky. It truly is. Yeah. And, you know, so that's where you need to really use your five senses. You know, does it smell like a cow or does it smell like plastic? use your eyes. You know, can you see the grain of the hide on the surface? You know, what does it feel like? Does it feel supple and soft or does it feel kind of stiff? You know, is the stitching regular or is it frayed? If you look at the side of the leather bag, can you see the color, the dye go all the way through or is it only on the surface? These are little tips and tricks that you can read up on, brush up on ahead of time that will really help you choose a souvenir that you're happy with and don't regret buying later.
So Pat bought a briefcase for 150 euro. Did he get ripped off?
It depends on the briefcase. I'll have to look at it. You know, if you find a truly high quality handmade leather bag, for example, in Florence, it may not be cheap by let's say North American standards, but it may be an extremely good value in the international marketplace. Now, if you have purchased directly from the person who made it, you know where it was made, you met the person, perhaps you've even seen it be made, I can guarantee you that you've paid the best possible price in that local market at that time. But more importantly, you've chosen a souvenir that has even greater value than the euro that you spent because you've come face to face with an authentic Florentine artisan, and that's really invaluable.
I'll tell you another story, Laura, and you can tell me how bad we were ripped off. We wanted to buy a purse for one of our children, for our daughter, as a souvenir. So my wife haggled and talked with what we thought was a reputable shop owner, not on the street, and paid maybe 30 euro for a nice-looking purse. 10 minutes later, we're walking near the Domo, and a street vendor has the same exact purse hanging from the stall and offers to sell us two for the price that we paid to the shop owner for one. Now, how is that possible? There is no distinction between the two.
That's correct. And that's the tricky part about buying leather in Florence. As I mentioned, sometimes the same bag can be in a high-end boutique or can be on a street stall at two completely different price points. And in reality, you know, it may have been made in the same place. Often the goods that are distributed to shops and other vendors in Florence are made in the Tuscan countryside. There are a number of small and medium-sized mom and pop run operations that just churn out huge volumes of leather goods that are then distributed via wholesalers to these shops and these street vendors like you encountered. And they're just different distribution channels, and they can be sold at different price points. And that's why it's really more valuable, I think, to take the time to seek out these artisan studios, because they're right there and they're making these beautiful things by hand. You can rest assured that you're buying something authentic, and that, as I mentioned, you're buying directly from the person who made it, and you can rest assured that you're paying the best possible price for that bag.
You've lived in Europe, you've lived in Latin America. We talk about quality and the craftsmanship. Do Italians still do it best?
Italians have such an interesting cultural perfect storm of factors that make it really an artisanal capital of the world. I mean, if you think about some of the items that come out of Italy that are just considered world class, many of them, of course, are culinary, like Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, traditional balsamic vinegar of Modena, mozzarella di bufala cheese, for example. I mean, limoncello, these are things that are recognized around the world. Leather goods, they're recognized around the world as a benchmark of quality and beauty and craftsmanship. And so this centuries old history of the guild system, of the focus on a family, of communal pride. You know, Italians have this term campanilismo, which is, you know, pride in my own town's tower. You know, you see these towns across Tuscany, these hill towns with a million towers. And that's really the core of it. It's that pride in that local sense of community and of the products that are made there.
It's interesting that you mentioned the pride. We had a private tour in Pistoia, which was it's a wonderful town just outside of Florence, if no one's been there. But the owner, the proprietor of the little restaurant that we had lunch in, was so proud of the meals that they made, and he didn't speak a word of English, but spent 10 minutes talking to Travis and I about what he was doing for us and how it was made. It's a fabulous, that pride shows in not just in the artistic stuff, but in everything that we came across.
Absolutely. It's deeply ingrained in the culture, and I think that really helps explain why Italian handmade goods are still considered world class.
Now, with the book in the Authentic Art Series Florence, you also get a companion guide to go with your purchase, correct? And that's The Artisans of Florence. That's an e-book that's going to be kind of a living, breathing document?
That's correct. The core guide to Florence is chock full of these tips and tricks, like I mentioned a few moments ago, of, you know, how to really train your eye and know what to look for when you're out on the street shopping for that leather bag or that piece of ceramics. The companion guide is an ebook called Artisans of Florence, and it's an continually updated, living, breathing document that gives you specific places to go. If you bring it along on your iPad or your Kindle, your e-reader, it's also an interactive document. You can actually click on an address and a map will pop up and show you exactly where that is. You can browse the establishment's website if they have one, or even email them, contact them. So it's very much a living, breathing document. And as part of the launch of my Florence guide, if you purchase the core guide, you'll get a code to get that Artisans of Florence free of charge. So they're meant to work. The two guides are meant to work together. They're companions, and they're meant to really enrich any traveler's experience.
And available on your website or Amazon, I believe, on April 1st, correct?
Yes, on all the online retailers. You can go to Amazon, Kobo, Nook, iTunes, and you'll find them there.
So you started, the Venice guide is done, and the Florence one is getting released. Are you going to start from the top and just work down and take us on a tour of Italy? Is that the plan with these guides?
The next pair of books to come out is on Naples and the Amalfi Coast, one of my very favorite places in the world. And then I'll also be covering Tuscany and Umbria, the countryside separately, and also Sicily and Sardinia.
So you got a busy year just writing books then, don't you?
Yes, it's a labor of love.
How often do you get back? Because obviously you've studied there, your wealth of knowledge stays with you. But how often do you get back to Italy?
Well, I lived in Italy for a little over 4 years. I lived in Europe for a total of 10 years. And I get back as often as I can. I also have a few people on the ground who do some background research for me. I'm also in direct contact with many of the artisans who are featured in my books. Mm-hmm.
So Travis and I will be your research assistants in Florence.
Great.
You know, just let us know when we start work.
You have four children. Do they share the same passion for travel and art and Europe as you do?
Well, my oldest son, I tease him and tell him he was made in Italy also. He was actually born there. So he speaks some Italian and yes, and really appreciates, I think, the heritage.
Laura Morelli, you've been fascinating. I know the Tuscany and Umbria guide are coming out in the fall, and I could ask you about that, but I think we save that for another day and we have you back, don't you think?
Oh, it would be my pleasure. I'd love to talk about the alabaster of Volterra or the terracotta of Impruneta and all of these other wonderful things that await people in the countryside.
That will be something we schedule for the fall. And I should also mention that you and I have corresponded a couple times, almost a year ago, when your book, The Gondola Maker, came out. Just real quickly, tell everybody what The Gondola Maker is about, because that was an award-winning book.
I have so far one work of fiction out there. The title of the book is The Gondola Maker. And as I was researching back in the late 90s, my first foray into this research of Italian artisans, I became fascinated with the fact that there was such an urge to pass on these traditions from one generation to the next. And as I've interviewed people, I heard this story over and over. This grandparents and parents would say how important it was to them to pass on their trade to the next generation. And I began to wonder what would happen if that child was not willing or able for some reason to pass on the parents' craft. And this story of a gondola maker and his heirs sort of popped into my head and remained there for many years. And finally, last year, my book, The Gondola Maker, finally appeared. And it has won several awards, which is very exciting and great. But it's a fictional account of a gondola maker in Venice and his troubled relationship with his son.
Laura Morelli, you can check out her books, The Gondola Maker, the Laura Morelli Authentic Art Series, and the Made In Series, where you can get Made in France, Made in the Southwest, and of course, the one we like the most, Made in Italy. Laura Morelli, thanks so much for joining us today on the Total Tuscany Podcast. We can't wait to have you back again to talk about your next Authentic Art Series of Tuscany and Umbria.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Pat, after talking to Laura, you're right. We needed these books before we made the trip.
Yeah, I think that would have been, it would have made it a lot more easier to select something authentic. But, you know, I think we did a good job because we took our time.
Yeah.
If you were a visitor, like a lot of people are, to Florence for 2 or 3 days, and you didn't have Laura's book, I think you'd have a problem.
There are many travel guides out there, but there are none like what Laura Morelli is offering. And again, it's available April 1st. If you're listening after April 1st, it's available right now. All you have to do is go to her website, lauramorelli.com, or you can also find it on amazon.com and all the major online book retailers. Again, it's Laura Morelli's Authentic Arts Florence, and I can't wait to talk to her again in the fall as the guide to Tuscany and Umbria.
Fascinating lady, fascinating.
We encourage you to follow us on our social media channels. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram. We'd love to hear your feedback about this podcast. Please feel free to leave your comments in the comment section right here on TotalTuscany.com. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next time on the Total Tuscany Podcast.